Houston's Community Station.
This is 90.1 KPFT FM and FM HD1 Houston, with translators at 89.5 FM K208DG Galveston and 91.9 FM K220KC Huntsville. Houston's Community Station, 90.1 KPFT, a Pacifica radio station.
It is 5 p.m. Thursday, and it's time for So What's Your Story? The only program originating in Houston devoted to storytelling, and it's found only on Houston's community station, listener-sponsored KPFT. I am Hank Rubicek, producer and tonight's host, and alongside the best team on radio, we celebrate the power of story by placing the spotlight on tellers who take us on journeys through windows of their souls. The United Nations Assembly designated January 27th Holocaust Remembrance Day, the anniversary of the liberation of Auschwitz-Birkenau, the most notorious of the Nazi death camps, the camp that serves as a symbol of what humans are capable of doing, and that the collective struggles that we face in fighting bigotry and hatred requires that we rid of the passive compliance that was largely to blame for the murder of 11.5 million people. Today's show is dedicated to those who perished by what this show does best, tell a story. The kind that commemorates the lives of those standing up instead of standing down. Today, we tell the story of 95-year-old Holocaust survivor Eva Young through readings from the play Eva, A Survivor's Tale by New York playwright Minette Greenberg. Teenage Eva is dragged from her home by Nazis. Several concentration camps later, at the age of 14, she engineers a bold escape from the German death march. In the play, Eva finds lodging with a Polish family until liberated by Allied soldiers. Despite the despair from not finding her own family, she somehow garners astonishing bravery while working for the Jewish underground. At 95, Eva is still with us, and her story of innocence, courage, and unfathomable strength is conveyed by the superb ensemble performers, director, and the playwright currently seated in gallery mode on Zoom. Through their dramatic reading, they're going to prove what this show touts every week, that everyone with the metal to dig deep and visit their well has a story to tell. Minette Greenberg has taught in New York for 35 years, fifth grade for 17, and then, as she says so eloquently, she wanted to spread the love, so she became a literacy specialist. Minette's bio is on our Facebook page, and here's the short course. She's written over 100 plays. She told me she initially didn't want to write a play about survivors because she didn't think anything new could be said. But then she met her next door neighbor, Eva. You know, Minette, growing up with Holocaust survivor grandparents showed me that everything important seems to be discussed over tea and the pastry, the kitchen rules, right? And apparently you also found that to be true, because it was the conversations in Eva's kitchen that changed your mind about writing this play. It's tough to answer in about a minute, but what was it about Eva that made these conversations so compelling?
Eva is such a compelling woman. I've never personally known someone who was such a risk taker. She risked her life, she risked her personal safety, she risked her job to take others. And listening to Eva, it was like listening to the tales of King Arthur.
King Arthur. Wow, that's an incredible analogy. And from knowing her a little and by watching your performance last week, I think that's a fabulous description. Minette, you know, the magic of Eva's story is that listeners see a face, an image of someone who lived through an atrocious time in history. In a sense, what did Eva's face teach you about living life? Does that make sense?
It sure does. Well, Eva is literally, we share a wall next door. And I'd knock on her door and I'd meet with Eva, and I'd see two things on her face: determination and welcome. If you came to her door, she welcomed you with joy and also some kind of pastry that she baked.
Oh yeah, I mean, you gotta eat some. Oh yeah, sure. What kind of pastry was it? Was it Jewish stuff like kiffles or a rugelach or a fig
strudel?
Like
strudel.
Okay.
Sometimes they were cookies.
Yes.
Depending on the holiday.
I just want all of our listeners to know that the Jewish pastry typically ends with the suffix ch, you know, tegelach, kichelach, rugelach. If you heard those words, then you know it's Jewish, right? So yeah, that's why I asked. Very good. Wonderful. Well, you know, eventually the play ended up at New York City's Polaris North Cooperation of Writers, Directors, and Actors, another entry on our Facebook page. But for our Houston listeners, Polaris is a lot like Stages Theater. And you chose director John Sinuta. Now, I'm going to interrogate him in a moment, but why John?
Well, John and I have the same work ethic. We both believe being kind and understanding to whoever you work with is most important, that working as hard as you can to reach the vision you have in your head. In my case, it was my script. In his case, it was his actor. He gets authentic emotional truth from each and every one, as you'll see.
Right. And, you know, I think that the play itself parallels Eva's heart. That's, you know, not much of a stretch, right? I really do. I think it really does parallel our heart. So beautiful. Mm-hmm. Dr. John Sinuta was the chair of the performing arts and director of the BFA program in acting for the theater, film, and television department at LIU Brooklyn, but took an early retirement in August 2021. He continues to teach communication as an adjunct, and like any good professor, this is where he ambushed some of the terrific acting students that we're going to hear today. Additional information about John and the actors can also be found on our Facebook page. But, you know, John, when I was watching the reading last week, you said when you were asked to direct Eva, you were honored. That's not a commonly used descriptor. Why honored?
I think when any writer sees my work and they say they want me to direct their new piece and they trust me to take their text, and as an acting teacher that I had that I've had in my life said, bring light to that text. It's a great honor that they've chosen me to do that. And also, I have to say, I was doubly honored after our first full reading of this at Polaris North, which Eva Young was there and talked afterwards, and it really hit me. I mean, I knew we were doing an incredible play and a very important play, but after hearing Eva Young herself speak, it hit me even deeper that we had done something very important and very special here.
You did something very, very special. John, what does it mean when you bring light to a script? What does that mean?
Well, this, you know, this acting teacher that I had many years ago, she said, your job as an actor is to illuminate, really, she said, to illuminate the text and to take it off the page and bring it to life as an actor. Then you do that by creating, you know, the life of the character, the way the character speaks, the way the character talks, and try and create an authentic character. And that's what it's about.
And that's what you did so successfully. Well, let's get to the story. Now, in this scene, an old woman is describing the gas chamber to a young Eva. But first, tell us the names of the actors and the characters they're going to portray.
Yes. Well, first, I just want to say that we have two sets of actors here. We have three actors who are from Polaris North, Ange Bernot, Colleen Kennedy, and Cam Kornman are members of Polaris North. And then we have two of our students, our seniors, who are graduating from our BFA program in acting for theater, film, and television at LIU Brooklyn, Lilith Ralph and Riley Brooke Kilman. So in this scene now, we're going to have, oh, and let me just also add that when I first read the play, Minette had stage directions there, and,
That's all right, you know, the dogs love the show too. I want listeners to know that the dogs that you hear were planted. We told them to bark at certain moments. We just want everyone to know that this was planned. That is how professional this program is.
Brought our dogs with us. Yes. Anyway, so, you know, Minette wrote stage directions as playwrights do in the usual way. And then in a discussion Minette and I had, we came to the conclusion that we should have a present day Eva, because the story is really the younger Eva, right? And we thought we should have the present day Eva do the stage directions as if she's telling her own story. So you're going to hear some of that today. And you're going to hear Colleen Kennedy will be playing present day Eva through doing the stage directions. And also in this scene, you have Lilith Ralph as young Eva, and you have Cam Kornman as Katya.
1941, night, the women's bunk room. All the women are asleep, except for me. I am crying. Katya, a Polish prisoner, wakes up.
Stop that noise. We need to sleep.
Oh, Katya, forgive me. I close my eyes, I see the soldiers breaking in, shooting my papa dead.
They killed him? In front of you? And where's your mama?
They took us to a truck, but I ran away. I don't know what happened to mama.
Shh. Hush now. Sleep. May God give you only sweet dreams.
Later that night, I toss and turn, sleepless.
I can't go back to that factory. They'll burn me again.
You have to stop that crying. You get us all in trouble. You got money?
You think I could have money in here?
Then I cannot help you.
No, wait!
You choose. You all got money somewhere.
It's here. I have it here.
In your tooth. Ooh, so clever. So, how we get it out?
Pull it out. While the dentist drilled the hole, my father told me you are not to be buried with that gem in your mouth.
It will hurt.
I don't care. No worse than being burned in the factory. So, I give you the gem. What will you do for me?
I'm not dirty Jew like you. Just unlucky Polish woman forced to work for Germans. What can I do?
It's a diamond.
Let me think. Maybe. Get you work in kitchen.
Yes, please. Anything but the factory.
Shh. Tell me. When you last see you, mama?
I don't know. I don't know where she is. I look all over. I don't see her.
Bad. Very bad. They probably take her to Leipzig.
What does that mean? You think maybe I can find her?
She's gone. Gone. Shh. To the orphans.
I don't understand.
They marched them all into building. Tell them it is shower to Colleen filthy Jews. Then they gassed them. Then some other Jews come in, pull out the gold teeth, take off the jewelry.
No, no, no! Stop! I don't want to hear. Why would a Jew do that to another Jew?
To stay alive. You'd be surprised what people do to stay alive.
I will never become like that. Oh, poor Mama. To suffer like that.
No! She's the lucky one. Her suffering is over.
Blackout.
So powerful. I told Manette, Lily, and Cam that when I first heard this segment, it resonated so richly. But here in the Holocaust Museum, Houston, there's a set of films called Voices, and one of the survivors, Sonia Stern, tells this story, and you'll understand why this really hit me. She tells the story about being at Auschwitz. She was one of the few that survived Auschwitz. And now she's 96 years old. And she tells the story that when she was at Auschwitz, she was looking for her mother. And she was looking out the window and she sees a big brown factory. And a stranger says to her, "Come here, what are you looking at?" And she says, "I'm looking for my mother." She said, "You see that smoke? That's your mother's and your sister's smoke." And Sonia says, "What do you mean?" She says, "That is their smoke." Sonia starts to cry. And then the woman says, "Now, stop your crying. Their problems are over. Today or tomorrow, you're going to end up there. Your problems have just begun. Stop your crying, because this is the end of the road." One of the incredible things about stories from our survivors is that they are so different, but yet they are so much the same. Tell us about this next scene.
Yeah. Okay, so the camp torments that the survivors endured with children and babies would give them up to families who were strangers or to institutions. After liberation, relief agencies struggled to reunite these children with their parents. The next scene portrays some of that struggle.
And we will have Lilith Ralph as young Eva once again, and Colleen Kennedy as present day Eva. And then we have Ange Bernot as Mrs. Arnault and Riley Brooke Hillman as little Rebecca.
Several years later, Toulouse, France, a farmhouse. I ride up to the farmhouse on a bicycle. I take a briefcase out of the carrier, pause, brush my skirt, walk to the door, and knock. Mrs. Arnault answers.
"Hi, how are you?"
"Yes, who are you?"
"I have some very exciting news that I think you'll want to hear."
"What?"
"If I can come in, I'll be able to tell you about it."
Mrs. Arnault tries to shut the door on me. I shove my foot in.
"Get your foot out of my door."
"But you don't even know who I am."
"I know who you are, and we're not interested."
"What about your daughter, Rebecca? Perhaps she wants to hear what I have to say?"
"My daughter's name is Roberta."
"Please, let's just talk a moment."
Mrs. Arnault opens the door. Her daughter, Rebecca, hides behind her mother's skirt.
"Roberta, go upstairs and play with your doll. Come, sit."
"We had a hard time tracking you down."
"We?"
"The relief organization."
"We moved a number of times."
"Hoping we wouldn't find you."
"Can't you just leave us be?"
"I am not going to talk about the child. I will tell you about the parents. Parents who spent 4 years in a concentration camp sent their daughter to you with the expectation you would keep her safe."
"We have kept her safe and happy."
"Wonderful. But only until they got out of the camps. They were liberated 6 months ago, and heartbroken to learn their two other children, their parents, sisters, and brothers, were not as lucky as Rebecca. All of them gone. Only Rebecca,
Roberta,
is still here. Their only living blood relative. They've gone through hell in those camps.
How would you know?
How? I am a survivor. I believe I am the only one of my family left. All the rest died in the camps or were killed there. I saw my own papa shot dead by the SS soldiers.
What a sad story.
Not a story. The truth.
Yes. Well, the family must be quite depressed by such horrible events. Don't they need time to recuperate from this tragedy? Roberta is safe here, happy.
They've been searching for their missing daughter all over Europe, trying to bring together whoever, whatever's left of their family.
And what of my family? You know the reason I took in Roberta.
Rebecca.
Roberta. Four miscarriages. And my thought? Christ himself saw my suffering and gave Roberta this wonderful gift to me.
She's Jewish. And Rebecca's parents were the ones who gave her to you. She wasn't a gift from your God, no matter what you think.
You need to leave my house. Me and my God decide what happens to Roberta, not some family who gave her away, never contacted her in all those years.
Mrs. Arnault, I may have spoken too hastily. Please just listen to my story. Then maybe you'll understand why I am here.
I will listen to your story.
Thank you. I was also in a camp. Saw my mother and brother taken away. I was left alone. Our neighbors were supposed to help me. They told my parents they would, but they did what you're doing. Closed the door on me.
You didn't come here asking for...
I was captured. All I wanted was my mama and brother. Every day in the camp, I'd ask, did you see my mama Helen or my brother Siggy? Every day. I never forgot.
Yes. I read all about it in the newspapers.
You didn't read all about it. The truth? My days in the camp? They'd line us up, point to the ones who went to the ovens, the ones too old, too young, too sick to work. The rest of us marched to our jobs. We worked day and night, hard manual labor, literally worked to death. A crust of bread, a miracle. Mostly we ate water a potato was boiled in.
I don't know if I...
Believe me. Yes. It's hard to believe human beings would treat each other that way, but understand, to the Germans, we were rats. Roaches to be exterminated, to die from hunger and overwork.
But you're here.
I escaped. One of the lucky ones. But Rebecca's parents didn't. They spent 4 long years in the work camps. That's why you never heard from them.
And you want me to risk my own daughter's well-being and sense of security? You, who believe so strongly in family? I can't. I just can't.
My story is their story.
My heart breaks to hear these stories. But what can I do? My heart would break if I sent my Roberta away back to them.
What about if you could see her?
In her new family? Oh, that would kill me.
I'd help you.
What if I saw she was treated badly? Sometimes that happens to people after war.
If you just agree to meet the parents, give them a chance, talk to each other.
I depend on other people to see my own child.
We know where you are, Mrs. Arnault. We know where Rebecca is.
I want my daughter, my Roberta, to come down, speak to you. Hear her feelings. See what she remembers. She doesn't even know she's Jewish anymore.
If I talk to her, Mrs. Arnault, she may cry.
Of course she'll cry. You'll tell her she's leaving me, her mother. You know, I don't know how you people can do this. Roberta? Roberta, come down, darling.
Rebecca runs in.
do you cry? What is this bad lady said that makes you cry?
Wants to talk to you.
No, I don't want to.
I take a small wooden doll out of my bag.
What's that?
I hold up the doll and make it dance to a Jewish song I sing.
It's like Tatala. You had a doll like that. Her name was Tatala, do you remember?
Rebecca looks at the doll. Her eyes widen.
Yes, I can see. You remember.
Rebecca pulls away from her mother, takes the doll from me, cradles it.
Tatala? And Mama?
Oh, my darling.
Remember your mama?
I'm her mama.
What does this lady want, Mama? I'm getting all mixed up.
Your Jewish parents.
My mama? My mama is not a dirty Jew.
You say things like that to her?
Me? You think I'd say that to my daughter?
Then who?
Roberta, tell this lady where you hear those words.
The school? All the grown-ups, they call them dirty. The Jews? The ladies in the lunchroom do it, so it's not wrong, is it?
That's a hard question to answer. Even for grown-ups, don't you think?
And after lunch, we go outside to play, and some children throw rocks and trip them. And the teacher, they don't make them stop. She laughs, and so we laugh.
You laugh, Roberta?
Isn't it funny to see them fall on the ground?
And this is what you want for her?
May I have the doll, Mama? It reminds me of something. I don't know. I can't remember.
I give Rebecca the doll.
You can have it. Rebecca?
Roberta.
I hum the Jewish song.
What is that, miss?
You want I should sing it to you?
I don't know. Mama, what do you think?
Whatever you want, Roberta, darling.
Rebecca runs to her mother, hugs her.
Oh, no, I don't want to. A stupid song. Just don't cry, Mama. Please don't. You make me cry.
They hug each other, cry into each other's arms.
Right now, to take her from you, it doesn't feel right. I don't know what the right thing is anymore.
Blackout.
My goodness. You know, this was, I don't know how you feel about looking at each other's expressions, but somehow it really works. This is nonfiction radio at its very best. This is Hank Rubicek on Houston's Community Station, KPFT 90.1 FM, 89.5 in Galveston, and 91.9 in Huntsville. You are listening to a special edition of So What's Your Story, commemorating Holocaust Remembrance Day on January 27th. Thanks to a talented lot from New York doing a select reading from playwright Minette Greenberg's Eva, A Survivor's Tale. They are director Dr. John Sanuto, actors Cam Corman, Lilf Ralph, Colleen Kennedy, Ange Bruneau, Riley Brooke Kilman, and of course, Minette Greenberg. You know, there's no better place to focus on today's theme than on this Pacifica station. During the peace movement in 1948, journalist Lewis Hill believed that a radio station can be supported by people, not corporations, because the people carry the heart of America. Well, Pacifica's anchor is in New York City, so my guests not only belong here, but represent the very best of what our stations do. And to broadcast this program in Houston adds to the richness of today's theme, because Houston's Holocaust Museum is a Houston gem and a national treasure. Holocaust Remembrance Day is a perfect time to visit Holocaust Museum Houston at 5401 Caroline. Just go to info@hmh.org for more information. I've been a docent at our extraordinary museum since 1998. It's the most important thing I do. And speaking of important things, how about developing the natural storyteller in you? The Houston Storytellers Guild is a terrific place to start. They meet virtually the fourth Tuesday of every month from 7 to 8:30 p.m. Central Time. The next swap is next Tuesday, January 25th. So visit www.HoustonStoryteller.org for the link to that swap and to all the future story swaps. Also remember to visit us on So What's Your Story at facebook.com/SoWhat'sYourStory to learn about our guests and tell us if you have guests that we ought to consider. Or you can always text me, Hank, at 832-277-1581. Our friends at the Moth at Warehouse Live and in New York City are back in full gear the second Tuesday of the month, where you'll enjoy some astounding personal narratives and meet some of the nicest people around. You know, my mother and grandmother were in Stutthof and my grandfather in Dachau. I lost most of my family before ever meeting them, and I heard the stories growing up. My grandmother and mother were on the notorious Stutthof death march when my Grammy, gifted with incredible instinct, grabbed my mother and two friends, darted out of line, and hid in a nearby barn. Moments later, machine gun fire sprayed the area, killing all the women except those my grandmother ushered into the barn. 10 minutes later, 10 quick circles of a second hand, my grandmother heard Russian voices. She knew Russian. They were liberated. That's why I'm here. It's the reason I was born, I think. Our story is our life, and our story is everyone's life. Historians point to the children of Terezin as Hitler's boldest gesture of propaganda, creating a model camp at Terezin after learning that the International Red Cross planned to visit it to witness the alleged actions. Children were hustled into the forest where they secured art and writing instruments from the underground and quickly but very eloquently expressed the true happenings at the camp with art and writing, especially poetry. There were many poems which, along with drawings compiled in the book I Never Saw a Butterfly, also a play by the same name by Celeste Responti, smuggled into the free world, which spoke the truth about the barbarism at the camp and all the others. Another example of resistance and courage. The most famous poem was entitled The Butterfly by Pavel Friedman, written June 4th, 1942. I asked Dr. Sanudo if he would be kind enough to read it, The Butterfly.
The last, the very last, so richly, brightly dazzling yellow. Perhaps if the sun's tears would sing against a white stone, such a yellow is carried lightly way up high. It went away, I'm sure, because it wished to kiss the world goodbye. For 7 weeks I lived in here, penned up inside this ghetto, but I have found my people here. The dandelions call to me, and the white chestnut candles in the court. Only I never saw another butterfly. That butterfly was the last one. Butterflies don't live here in the ghetto.
Thank you. Thank you so much, John. You know, when I do tours and I talk about that poem, I look at middle school kids and I say things like, don't give your English teachers a hard time about what the importance of a metaphor is anymore, for goodness sakes, right? The idea of thinking this creatively, this linguistically, this semantically within the confines of a ghetto and using this as a mechanism by which we make our point fully known to significant human beings looking for survival is, in my mind, just indescribably courageous. You know, having the composure to use the written word as a form of resistance may sound unrealistic, but I want our listeners to know that the desire to stay alive, to tell the world what happened, was the only reality on the minds of those who feared the worst. Eva is another example of poise under incomprehensible fear. She too penned a poem we're about to hear read by our actors depicting Eva, young and old.
Leipzig, Germany, April 1945. When the weather was stormy and the rain was pouring, the first frost was forever freezing. Thousands of us were standing in rows of five across. Every morning at an early hour, when a person is still in his deep sleep, the German dog set us on the slaves' march. They rushed us and overburdened us from place to place, from morning to night, from night to day, only because we were Jews. They consoled us that for the Jews there is only the crematorium. There was no end to our suffering. Many thought of revenge, but no one believed they would survive that. We thought that God had forgotten the Jewish nation, and now we were at our end. But nevertheless, in the depth of the heart, there was the glow of freedom. And this glow brought forth from the depths the unbelievably strong will to survive. Man is often so strong that he can bend steel and not let his spirit be broken. Day after day passed, springs and winters, and we were still standing in rows of five across and always felt death. There was no more strength to survive. But I wanted to die as a free person. Often my mother would say, "Daybreak won't come earlier unless the night is totally dark." And on a spring day, the news broke that coming soon, we would be free.
We felt from the distance the oncoming freedom, the feelings of freedom. Every Jewish heart rose above the despair, but there were still unendurable days before us. On April 10th, 1945, a deep, dark night, they roused us from sleep, put us in rows of five, and without food or drink, marched us 40 kilometers every day on that final deadly slaves' march. All were drained, exhausted, shattered on that final death march. And so, like a legendary narrative, in the most difficult, critical, inhumane moment of the entire previous suffering, liberty drew near. Overwhelmed, drunk with freedom. Do you remember? Five in a row, tormented on the 10th day of the last death march. We became free people again. Not everyone can feel this. Not everyone can grasp this. And then each one for themselves made a vow.
That freedom will be theirs forever.
Never again to be a slave.
Well, that's incredible. We want to talk to both of you, Colleen Lilly. When you were practicing this poem, did Eva coach you at all? I know John did, of course, but did Eva tell you what she was thinking and how you'd like this to be interpreted in your mind? Lily, let me share with you. What do you think?
She didn't coach us herself, but Minette had sent me, and everyone else in the cast, she had sent me an interview that Eva had done, and she sent us pictures as well. Yeah. So using those resources, I kind of took what I heard from her and what I saw from her and tried to just bring that to the poem. And
yeah, we have a little bit more time in this section, and I'm happy because I wanted to ask you a little bit when you access information from that interview, right? I know this is a hard question and I apologize, but it's so important. What was it that you captured about her persona? How did you capture her strength to convey in this poem?
In this poem? Well, I'm not really sure how to describe it. It's just when I read it, I feel just like her words and through that, like her like resilience and like her struggle. And I just kind of say through the words, like how that feels, if that makes sense.
It makes better sense than you think. And I'm sorry for what seems to be a hard question, but you responded to it brilliantly. It's about transformation, right? Mm-hmm. And I know John knows what I'm talking about. It's about transformation. And that's what this play does so beautifully. You are as a cluster, as a group of professionals, you are transformed. That's why it works. That's why story works. You know, the whole idea of storytelling is that somehow it's transformative. Somehow we take people on a journey. We return them safely to the present. It's something that works with stories better than anything else. And that's what you do both individually and collectively so magically. Colleen, what about you? You are so much fun to watch when you read this poem. I wish our listeners could watch you. What are you thinking about when you convey these words?
I feel absolutely overwhelmed. This got to me. This is the first time that I have actually done the poem, because in the play it's been Young Lily. And it just suddenly, I thought, how did she ever do that? How did anyone ever survive that? Mm-hmm. It's just staggering. It's a miracle.
Mm. Yeah.
It's overwhelming.
Oh, yeah. Overwhelming, transformative. Such a beautiful poem reflecting voices of introspection. There's a section in the Houston Holocaust Museum, also at the National Museum and Yad Vashem in Jerusalem. It's a section called Young Diarists, but the one that we have at the museum in Houston, it's especially poignant. Young Diarists has become a powerful component because it's a set of diary entries collected from children who are in hiding, awaiting their death, and as refugees, all imparting these different voices of indescribable wisdom. And that's what I think about when I listen to the two of you read this poem. It's looking at different life cycles, different elements of your life, different trajectories, different ways you're going. One person young, one person older, the same person, but yet so different. And that's what I think about, these different voices. Stories about the Holocaust, again, are so different, but yet they are so, so very much the same. To all of you, I'm going to open this up for discussion. You know, we learn something new every time we tell a story, even the same story. So, for example, last week when I heard you tell the story, you're telling the same story tonight in a different mode. And I'm wondering what one thought that you have after exploring Eva in this context, anything that you've learned new, any kind of new insight, any kind of thought or idea that you feel that you want to share with us, one new thing. Ange, you look like you're deep in thought. Something come to mind?
Well, for my character, I felt this time around, it was interesting, I felt the passion, the same passion that Eva feels for my daughter. I don't want to let her go. And so Eva has the same thing of wanting to take her with that passion and tenacity. And I felt the passion and tenacity of that situation, of this woman who has taken this child in, and now it's her child. Mm-hmm. And to give that up, I can't imagine what that would be like.
That's amazing. Yes. Cam, what do you think? New thought?
I guess tonight it was even more, I guess, what always goes on when I work on this character, because she's such a survivor. Mm-hmm. It's that what's going on is tick tock, tick tock, tick tock, tick tock. What do I do next? How do I survive? How do I get her to help me survive? And oh, by helping her, I become to love her a little bit. And she becomes part of the family that I protect. But then how do I get her to help me? And every moment is, you know, and somehow doing it just vocally made it more.
Right. When you talk about a survivor, we use that word a lot, but what characteristics make a survivor?
I think the determination to live and never the what I think of as the tick-tock. What do I do next? I lie awake at night.
Yes.
And I think, how am I going to get my next meal?
Yeah.
Who will help me? How? Yes. Who will be my ally?
Yeah.
What can I do? I hear mm-hmm. somebody crying. I shut them up. But then I think, how can I use them?
Yeah, we were just listening to, I was listening to one of our survivors, Dr. Anna Steinberger, 96 years old. She taught medical school until 2 years ago. Yeah. Well, you know, why did she retire so young, right? And she was a remarkable person. And she said to a young group of middle school kids, she said, you know, I wasn't hungry for 6 days or 6 months. I was hungry for 6 years. She said, none of you have ever been hungry. You don't know. You know, she was explaining that hunger is a whole different kind of physiological process and none of us could ever fathom. You know, over 100,000 people were killed by eating Hershey bars, you know, when they were liberated because their stomachs exploded. The idea of what starvation is something none of us could ever imagine. So when we think about the notion of survival, we think about what it means to be hungry. It's something that we have to hear stories about because we can't possibly imagine it any other way. Riley, what do you think? A thought come to mind?
Sure. I think for my character, obviously I'm much older than the character that I'm playing. And I think that it's really important to show like the innocence of someone so young and like why it's important to talk about these things, because the way like your mind is developing and the way like you're gonna like think about things in the future, your brain is so malleable at such a young age. I think that's part of why it's important to like remind people about what happened in history, because otherwise it's just going to get lost. That's why it's important to keep
telling
stories.
It is going to get lost. Yeah, it is going to get lost. And people are already denying it. And it's so difficult to imagine that. John?
Yeah, I just want to add that Riley also plays another lead. She doubles up. Some of the actors, you know, this cast is much larger than what we have here today. And some of the actors double up on roles. And Riley actually plays a lead character named Masha, who's a friend who young Eva meets in the camps.
Yes.
So, and this is just one of the smaller role that Riley plays, but she does a beautiful Masha as well.
She sure does. And I remember that very, very distinctively from last week. Does a beautiful Masha. Absolutely. Yes. Colleen, thought?
Tori?
Have you got a thought for us? Something different, unique after this unfolded for you again this evening?
I feel that I have to go deeper into it myself,
yeah,
and
yeah.
Do what I can to keep the story yeah. going.
Well, I have to tell you something. Watching you and listening to you, I don't know how you could possibly go deeper. But boy, if there's anybody who can do it, I'll bet my money on you. Minette?
Well, first of all, Eva's credo was, you can die if you risk, but... Mm-hmm. Also die if you don't risk.
Oh. Oh my gosh, yes, yes.
And yep. And that's, I mean, she would say that in that Jewish tone.
Yeah. So
I could die. But right. If I didn't do anything, right. I could also die.
Right, exactly, exactly. I don't know if I mentioned to you, Minette, when we talked on the phone many times, but I think I've mentioned to our listeners that my grandmother was the consummate storyteller. I mean, that's where I learned my love for story, even though I didn't know it till decades later. Everything was in story form. I mean, everything. You couldn't hear anything unless it was in a story. If you asked her what's for dinner, she would never tell you. She would always say, well, I remember one time she'd say, well, let me tell you about the little boy at the carnival. And I'm thinking, what the hell does this have to do with dinner, Grammy? Just listen to me. So for 20 minutes, she's telling me the story about a little boy at a carnival. And 20 minutes later, you realize that the story was about, don't ever ask me what's for dinner again. It doesn't make any difference, right? And if it wasn't a story, then she would offer, as Minette just pointed out, this Jewish cadence that made you laugh. So for example, I would ask her things like, Grammy, do you like my girlfriend? Like in high school. And she would say something like, well, you know, I was at the post office last week and I didn't see her picture up on the wall. Okay, but do you like her? Well, you know, she had dinner over here the other night. She could use a knife and fork. And I got the idea. This is her way of saying she's a human being. She's nothing special, right? That was her way of saying it.
I have something to add to that, if you don't
please.
Mind.
Oh, yeah.
So my thought, and especially after spending probably 8 years at different times in Eva's apartment, if you stop and listen, you hear amazing stories. They are brave. They are full of heartbreak and crises, but they are the things that make humans unique.
Yeah. They really are. Yeah. They make humans unique. Yeah, and I don't know if that uniqueness, you know, manifests nearly as often as it should. I don't know. It's these kind of stories are so very, very critical. I'm always upset when I hear people not knowing about the Holocaust, not hearing about the Holocaust, and even worse, not really caring about the Holocaust, thinking that somehow that this is old stuff. You know, when I go through our museum, I tell people all the time, this is called a museum, but there are no dinosaurs hanging around here. There are still people who remember this. There's over 100,000 in Israel still alive. There's an additional 70 some thousand worldwide who remember this. My mother is a young 90-year-old. She was on the younger side of the survivor, but she remembers it all. And if it wasn't for my grandmother lying to the Gestapo about my mother's age, I would not be here. My mother was 13, and when you were under the age of 14, you were separated from your mother, and you were immediately killed. And when my mother was checking in at the Gestapo at Stutthof, my grandmother heard this number 14 going around all over the place. So she knew that the number 14 was significant. So when my mother was checking in, my grandmother pinched her real hard and my mother yells, ouch. And my grandmother tells the Gestapo in German, my grandma, oh, she stepped on a stone, but she's 14 years old. Because if she said that she was, of course, now we always tease her because her birth certificate says a year older than she really is. So that's a whole nother story. So many lessons, so many lessons come to mind when reflecting on what we're learning here. There are so many lessons, but you know, Eva's words so movingly sums it up. And I know that one of you are going to read her words, right? Correct?
Yes.
Please.
My name is Eva Young. I am a Holocaust survivor. In order to survive, you have to be strong, hopeful, and never give up. the Holocaust should never be forgotten, so that future generations do not repeat the mistakes of the past.
Do not repeat the mistakes of the past. I think we are, unfortunately. You know, John, you were mentioning the what's going on right now as we speak. A terrible thing is happening in Texas right now, where there's somebody taking hostages at the temple. And where is it again? In
Colleyville,
right now on this Saturday night when we are producing it. I don't know if that is a way of God speaking to us. I'm not entirely sure, but I know that is pretty frightening in my mind. But hate hasn't gone away, has it? For some reason, we turn to hate as a way, I guess, because we can't find the antidotes for narrow-mindedness and prejudice. I'm not really sure. But what beautiful words. My name is Eva Young. I am a Holocaust survivor. In order to survive, you have to be strong, hopeful, and never give up. The Holocaust should never be forgotten, so that future generations do not repeat the mistakes of the past. That was read by Colleen. So beautiful. Well, you know, every day, the remaining number of Holocaust survivors are less than they were yesterday. Several passed from the time the show was produced to when it will be aired. Now, post-COVID, whatever in the world that seems to mean, or something close to it, will take Eva, the survivor's tale, to the stage. And I'm going to certainly help to promote this to the world. Every week, we talk about how frustrating it is because we don't have enough time to complete a program the way that I certainly would like. And that is a real dramatic understatement for this show. We're going to close tonight with String Quartet Number 1, a contemplative piece by Erwin Schulhoff, one of the many Jewish composers killed in the Holocaust, from the appropriately named CD, Silenced Voices. Thank you, Manette Greenberg, John Sanuto, Ange Bernot, Riley Brooke-Hillman, Lilf Ralph, Cam Corman, and Colleen Kennedy for demonstrating generosity of heart and proving that a story can stretch the boundaries of the human heart. Don't you dare move, because Charles Hightower's R&B Gold is up next with a very cool mix of soul. Make Houston's community station, KPFT 90.1, a part of every day. And while you're driving home or just chilling, join us every Thursday at 5 p.m. for So What's Your Story? You keep loving a great story, and we're going to keep bringing them to you. This is Dr. Hank Rubichek, and along with the rest of the So What's Your Story team, we never want you to forget that even if a story doesn't end happily, it doesn't mean we can't live happily ever after. Take care of yourselves. Peace.
This is DJ Tom Albright coming at you with the Jazz Latino HD show every Tuesday from 5 to 6 p.m. with Latin Jazz and Jazz Latin, followed by an hour of hot salsa dura made for your dancing shoes from 6 to 7 p.m. every Tuesday. And if that's not enough, the Jazz Latino HD show is repeated every Thursday from 10 a.m. to 12 noon. All that on Houston's community station, KPFT HD. D2, the veritably vital virtual radio source via the electron waves on the internet. Just go to kpft.org and scroll down. On the right side is the button to listen to HD2, or go to archive.kpft.org to listen anytime, 24/7.
Greetings, this is Student Regional Minister Dr. Abdul Halim Muhammad, the host of Connect the Dots. Join us at our new time, Thursday at 10 p.m., right here on KPFT, Houston's Community Station.
If you have a comment, suggestion, or if you want to just tell us about a concert coming up or perhaps a community event, you can do it all right now on our website. Log in today at KPFT.
You're listening to